Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 19th of November. In 2014, there was a Pew study that our guest this hour cites in her recent article. It shows that voters have more intense animosity for the other side than at any point in the last 20 years. Many even think of those in the opposing party as a threat to the nation's well-being. Rebecca Nelson is the White House correspondent for the National Journal and author of the recently published piece, The War on Partisanship, How Fighting Polarization Became Its Own Cause. She covers a number of organizations, most started in the last 5 years, that see ideological division and political gridlock as urgent problems. Do you see this as an urgent problem, and are you doing anything about it? She talks about some groups where people just gather in their living rooms, and they are people of opposing political viewpoints, and they get together and talk about issues that they may disagree on to see if there is some kind of common ground, and also to understand and respect the other person's point of view. We're welcoming phone calls during the course of this hour, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hello, Rebecca. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. So let's talk about how bad it is. Do you agree with this Pew study that we have more intense animosity than at any other time in the past 20 years?
Most definitely. I mean, being based in Washington, you can see the gridlock in Congress. You can see that Congress is more gridlock, that more issues are in gridlock than ever before, and even among voters. In Washington, people, as you said, that Pew study I cited, more people think that the other side is a threat to the nation's well-being. That's more people than ever before. So, yes, it does seem like an urgent problem, because if we can't listen to the other side, you see from the community level up through Congress that things just aren't getting done.
Let's start with the group No Labels. You spent a lot of time with that group, and they have heard from quite a few presidential candidates. What I found disheartening and amusing at the same time is that many of these candidates spoke to this group that's supposed to be dealing with partisanship in very partisan fashion.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most interesting parts of that was Donald Trump. He spoke at this convention, and that, to me, was an irony in and of itself a little bit, because he's had such polarizing language. And a woman actually at the convention called him out on that and asked, you know, does your partisan rhetoric, your intense partisan rhetoric on the trail, does that diminish or limit your ability to solve problems? And he said, you know, I went to Ivy League schools. I know it's divisive, and I know it's not divisive. And so that in and of itself was very partisan language.
Mm-hmm. What about the broader picture here? How much can we blame partisanship on what we see on television, the age of Fox News and of MSNBC, the age of Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders?
Yeah, I mean, that is a big part of why America is so polarized. There are a lot of different factors from, like you said, cable news. There's MSNBC, Fox News, that really reinforce these echo chambers. So there are lots of different reasons. It's not just that we're more polarized. There are these deep factors that contribute to it. Another reason for that, aside from cable news, is people have started sorting themselves into different communities that have more that are more conservative, that are more liberal. So if you are more liberal, you tend to live in a city like Austin, Texas. Or mm-hmm. if you're more conservative, you tend to live in Scott County, Minnesota, is a liberal or a more conservative enclave.
So you talked with people in how many of these groups? About 10 or 11 groups?
Yeah, I talked to 11 different groups to determine, you know, what they're specifically doing. And they all have different thoughts and different philosophies on why this polarization is happening and what should be done to stop it. So you mentioned one of those groups getting together in people's living rooms. That's Living Room Conversations, very aptly titled. And their whole idea is getting together. You have one person who brings two friends, so generally maybe a Democrat who brings two Democrat friends and a Republican who brings two Republican friends, and they all talk in someone's living room about really intense political issues like immigration or gun control. And the idea behind that is you're abiding by these social norms of a host, one person's a host and you're a guest. So you're not going to really devolve into that really intense, rancorous partisanship when you're having tea and cookies in someone's living room.
You hope not, but we do have Thanksgiving coming up, and who knows what's going to happen at that table this year, right?
That's true.
You never know. No labels, you write, probably the most prominent among these groups, have really a set of things that they would like to see done. Goal setting, create 25 million new jobs over the next 10 years, secure Social Security and Medicare for another 75 years, balance the budget by 2030, and make America energy secure by 2024. Do most of the other groups agree that these are the issues where we can achieve some kind of bipartisan consensus and achieve a goal, or is everybody all over the board as to what's important to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, none of the other groups take this specific approach of laying out, here are the things we need to do. I mean, I think most people can agree that this national strategic agenda, they call it, you know, all those goals that you mentioned, are things pretty much everyone can get behind. They're pretty bipartisan, across the board, things that people can agree on. But the other groups have all sorts of other kind of ideas about what we should do to what can be done, I guess, or what we should get behind. And most of the groups, I guess, believe that it's not so much the end goal. No Labels is one of the only ones that says, here's the end goal that we want, and that fits in with their ethos of goal setting. But most of these other groups are saying, here's the process that we can get there, and it's up to people in Congress or people, voters in communities, to determine what those solutions are through a process of hearing each other out.
Mm-hmm. One of the people from the Bipartisan Policy Center that said that this process, quote, reflects the idealized imagination for how Congress would work if members reached across the aisle. Doesn't it work that way in cafes, maybe at dinner conversations or lunch or in somebody's office? Isn't there some of that taking place?
Well, it used to be a lot more, and that's kind of the issue that Bipartisan Policy Center and these other groups are trying to combat. Before Newt Gingrich was Speaker, and that's kind of a marker that some social psychologists and historians have laid down. Before that, Congress members were encouraged to come to Washington, to live in Washington, and move their families here. So they were, you know, living on Capitol Hill with maybe next door neighbors with a Republican if they were a Democrat. So they'd see each other out for walks or at different community events. And that just doesn't happen as much anymore. Gingrich really discouraged lawmakers from moving to Washington. And so they would come in, and now, as they do, they come in for the work week and leave on the weekends, many of them do. So they're not having that natural neighborly interaction that they once did.
Well, 1995 was a long time ago, so you're saying that's persisted for all these years, that people are going home more now?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's sort of the marker that was, again, just one factor of an intensely polarized or sort of an upward trend to be more polarized. But historians look back at that along with many other factors, another being not having a common enemy in, for example, the Soviet Union, or not having a common thing to kind of get behind and agree with other people on. That's mm-hmm. another factor.
Well, we sure have a common enemy now, but we're sure partisan about how to deal with it, aren't we?
Yeah, that's very true. That's a great point. And so that could be, I mean, we could see that there is a coalescing of neighborliness or understanding as far as ISIS goes or other terrorist groups, but it doesn't, as you said, it doesn't seem like that is too likely.
Right. Let's spend a little more time on this bipartisan policy center. You have some former heavyweight politicians in this group. What is their focus? Who's involved with that group? And have they had any success in getting some of their ideas enacted into legislation?
Yeah, so Tom Daschle and Trent Lott and two other former Senate Majority Leaders got together to create this group. And they have had some success. They've had limited success. The way their president described it to me was when I said, you know, how do you measure or what have your successes been? He said, what's a better question is what have we contributed to? And while that's a fair statement, I mean, you can't point to one group saying this is a good idea and it was enacted into law as that's the only factor why it became law. But it's also somewhat skirting the question a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. To say, you know, it's not all us when that's their entire work. So they contributed to the bipartisan doc fix bill earlier this year and a few other legislative successes, but really not a lot of note.
And the No Labels group, this is an interesting thing for them to do. I wonder if it'll get any publicity. You talk about No Labels awarding a problem solver seal to each presidential candidate who does what?
Right. So this problem solver seal is tied back to this these four goals that we mentioned earlier, these, you know, securing Social Security and Medicare for another 75 years, et cetera. So the idea behind this is every 2016 candidate, they want to agree to these goals. So if they agree to these goals and say that they will and sort of pledge that they will meet with Congress within 30 days of taking office to tackle at least one of these goals, they will be awarded this problem solver seal. So the idea is to get, they hope, every candidate on board with the problem solver seal. And then eventually whoever's elected president will have to abide by this. They'll have to meet with Congress to tackle one of these very broad, wide-ranging goals.
We're going to invite our audience to call in and tell us what you think about these efforts. Our guest this hour is Rebecca Nelson. And Rebecca has written a very interesting piece in the National Journal, The War on Partisanship, How Fighting Polarization Became Its Own Cause. And she outlines quite a few groups in this country trying to take on the issue of polarization by having people who are on polar opposite sides of many issues get together and talk to each other in a civil fashion about what are solutions to some of the major problems that everybody would identify as a major problem. Rebecca, White House correspondent for the National Journal. Her work has appeared in Time, Chicago, Ms., Washingtonian, where she also previously covered all things D.C. We're welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. Maybe you're a member of a group like this, or you have some insight as to how we reach the point where we have such excessive partisanship. Is it cable television? Is it just politicians that different ilk these days and more firmly entrenched in ideas and less willing to compromise? Where did it all come from? Oh, we have a ton of phone calls on this. So we'll start with you in just one moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for Rebecca And we start with George in New Albion, Iowa. Hi, George.
Hi. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, George.
Hi. Are you there?
We are. Go right ahead.
I am a Democrat, and when I get together with my Republican friends, the first problem we have, inevitably, is that I'm presented with false information. And so we begin with the education process, or let's pull out our fact check, and it dissolves from there.
Well, that's a really good point. How does everybody determine what the truth is, what the facts are, Rebecca?
I mean, that is an excellent point, and I think fact-checking in general can really ease probably a lot of the polarization. But I think a lot of these, what end up being thought of as facts, can be propagated by, as we mentioned earlier, very partisan or ideological cable news. MSNBC, Fox News might not be saying something that's completely inaccurate, but maybe a little bit more partisan or has a little bit of a slant on it. And then it's almost like a game of telephone where someone hears that and kind of takes it a step further. And it can be taken even further beyond that, each degree of separation away from the original fact. And so I think presenting someone with the actual facts from, you know, a credible nonpartisan news source, that can really do a lot to help.
Mm-hmm. Does that happen in your discussions, George? Can you go to a place where you can find the facts?
Oh, sure. It's easy. Nowadays, everybody has a phone and a laptop, and it's easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, very often I find that they don't have the facts straight on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a good way to approach that, as opposed to just saying, you know, here are the actual facts, you're totally wrong, that people don't tend to like that when you confront them with, you know, you're wrong. And in my research, the best way to kind of handle that is to ask questions and say, well, maybe you haven't considered XYZ, and here's this fact from X credible news source. And to open up a conversation, a respecting, a two-way street that's respecting each other, not an attack mode, I guess, would be a good way to approach that.
Thank you very much for your call, George. Let's go to Scott in La Crosse next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I have a theory here, and that the reason why gay marriage became so quickly a largely accepted fact of life in today's America is that in previous years, a lot of people just thought so horribly about gay people because they didn't know anybody who was gay.
Mm.
And all these people came out of the closet, and all of a sudden, people who once thought, well, I don't think gays ought to have any rights, but my Aunt Sally, her partner should be able to help make her life decisions if she gets ill. And it seems to me that what we're doing now is we're going the opposite direction. We're self-siloing, you know? I mean, I'm that same way. You know, I run up against these people, and I'm going, oh, man, I don't want to spend any time with you. You're an idiot, you know? And it's so, and so I don't. And so I wind up, again, we're siloed. And that to me seems like the most dangerous aspect of all of this, because this is our political future we're talking about.
Mm.
And if we can't, you know, and if we can't talk to one another, and we're going to send people to D.C. who we will punish severely for getting out of the silo, you know, mm-hmm. This is not a good way to run a government.
So, Scott, how are you going to get out of the silo?
Yeah, good question, isn't it? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll give you a little example. There's a guy who goes to this one bar I frequent, and we got we talk, you know, we got into politics, and I just made my horrible discovery that he and I are on different sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I just figured, okay, I'm still talking to the guy when we're at the bar sometimes, but we don't talk politics. And I figure, okay, he's still a decent human being. But I don't know. It seems to me like there was a time in this country, wasn't one of the things that you didn't talk about, religion and politics and all that? Maybe we were better off. And if I don't know that you're, in my opinion, a raging idiot, and you don't know, in your opinion, that I'm a raging idiot, you know, leave it in the voting booth and get on with your lives. But for heaven's sakes, let's quit electing people who can't work together and can't even be in the same room.
Thank you, Scott. Rebecca.
Yeah, I think that's such an excellent point. And one of the books that I cite in this story is called The Big Sort, and it's exactly what you're talking about. People have balkanized themselves geographically, not just in, you know, in Congress, but where you choose to live. And Bill Bishop, I think he had a really great quote that I include in the piece. We're living with the consequences of this segregation by way of life. Pockets of like-minded citizens that have become so ideologically inbred that we don't know, can't understand, and can barely conceive of those people who live just a few miles away. And the way to combat that is to meet people that you, as you were saying, you think of this person as, you know, you think these people are crazy who have opposite views as you, and to meet them and see they're decent people. There was another great quote from FBI Director Jim Comey, who said, "It's harder to hate up close." And I think that just makes it, that sums it up so well, that, you know, it's harder to think of someone as a political caricature when you're chatting with them and you see that they're a normal, decent human.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott, as always, for your call. John from Racine, I believe the mayor of Racine is calling. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Fine. How are you? Thanks for calling.
I'm doing great. Well, thank you. And you know what? I appreciate you putting the No Labels group on today. This is a great group. I've actually been part of it. I've been to Washington for some of their meetings.
Oh.
And the reason I appreciate it is because they're getting at the heart of the issues that really matter. And while the mayors are all trying to solve these issues on the local level, the only way that we really see any dramatic change happening in Washington is if people decide that, once again, they are really the strength of this nation and start demanding answers to the questions that No Labels and groups like them are asking. So I just can't say how much I appreciate the show and the fact that the group's on in bringing these important issues to the forefront.
John, can you tell me more about the meetings that you go to? What do you talk about?
Well, really, solutions. We talk about the solutions that, you know, we are dealing with every day, a balanced budget, providing a good infrastructure for businesses and communities alike, health care for people that is smart health care, efficient, affordable, good quality of life so we can build our businesses in our regions. But making smart decisions with efficiency and effectiveness really at the heart of those decisions. And that's what this group is talking about, is are we making smart decisions? And since we're really not in Congress right now, I think that the best way to change that is to simply say to the people, listen, here are the facts, and here's what's really out there, and here's what we're facing. So you need to stand up and say to those elected officials, you need to answer these questions, but more importantly, we're not going to support you unless you do.
Hmm. Interesting. We'll be in touch with you. We'll do a show down the road.
Love to see you, Kathleen, and thank you, and thanks to the group.
Thank you. Mayor of Racine, who happened to be listening, Mayor John Dickert, who goes to the meetings. Is that unusual for a mayor from a Wisconsin town to go to one of the no-label meetings, or is it drawing people who are in local office all over the country? Rebecca.
I had not heard that mayors, that more local elected officials were involved in the No Labels movement. So that was really interesting to me to hear. I had talked to a number of college students who have been involved in No Labels from, you know, the University of Arizona, from Franklin and Marshall, from the University of Texas at Dallas. And I had heard about these activists, these local activists who had been involved, but I did not know that mayors and other,
yeah, it's
other
good to
more
hear.
Local levels. Yeah.
Right. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Rebecca, but we've had these people on, and they're coming on again on Monday to talk about the post office. This program, when we were talking about getting at what facts are, from the University of Maryland, the Program for Public Consultation, they look at a campaign for a citizen cabinet, and they get together people from different states. Half of them are conservative, half of them are liberal. They present facts on certain kinds of issues, which are put together by people who have various political viewpoints, too, but can agree on what the facts are, and then find out what policy recommendations are from citizens in the country. And it's amazing how they achieve consensus from people who you would think would espouse a certain policy over another when presented with facts. A lot of people, Democrats and Republicans, agree on the same course of action.
Mm-hmm. That is
Isn't that interesting?
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have found that, or in my research for this story, I have found that as well, that oftentimes the lens of Democrat or Republican, no matter what the solution is, turns people off, and they just don't even want to listen to the policy solution.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mayor Dicker, for listening and joining the conversation. Barbara in Waupaca. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. I had one little statement, and then I wanted to say something about the language that we're seeming to use. And my statement is that I wish that we as Americans could see that we're getting to be more like our supposed enemies, and we say, you know, the Sunni can't talk to the Shiite, and we're becoming more like that than they are becoming more democratized. But a part of the problem that I see in approaching the issues is of the language that we use. And the two words, one is compromise, which to me, if we're looking for compromise and that's the best we think we can do, that's a lose-lose situation, because I'm going to guard what I don't want to give up, and I want to see what I can get you to give up.
Sure.
To compromise.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, we have our politicians all tell us they're going to fight for us. So the two words that I would like to get rid of are compromise and fighting. I don't want anyone to fight for me. I would like people to collaborate and to cooperate and to come together to find the best solution, and I would like them to work for me. And I just don't know what we can do to get these words in, but I think they're important.
Oh, those are good points. Rebecca.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the groups that I spoke with, Bipartisan Policy Center in particular, really hold on to the fact that they don't think that people should get rid of their partisanship. Bipartisan Policy Center President Jason Grummet told me, you know, we're proud, principled, aggressive partisans, and that's important to hold on to what you believe in and your basic core political beliefs. But I guess compromise to many of these groups isn't we're going to take a little bit of I'm going to give any ground on what I believe, but just coming to the table and realizing, as we were saying a moment ago, that maybe we do have similar ideas about how to find solutions.
Thank you very much for your call. Our number one line is open as we talk about the war on partisanship here on the Ideas Network, how fighting polarization became its own cause. Rebecca Nelson is our guest this hour, wrote that piece that we are discussing, and she is White House correspondent for the National Journal. Let's go next to Bob in Stevens Point. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
One thing that we're leaving out is one half of legislation insofar as the House and the Senate, forget what it is that they're passing, but it's passing and it's sent to the president. And the president, well, not to make it partisan, but as I already said, I'm going to veto that. Why isn't the president at that stage when the House and Senate pass a bill, whether you like it or not, isn't compromising? And that's my question.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I think you can even trace some of the president's partisanship, although I don't think you can blame partisanship on the president alone or Congress alone or any one lawmaker alone. I think, as we've been talking about, it's this sort of movement. But I think this comes back to these political silos, and I think it's unfortunate that even the president who needs to be listening to all sides is sort of siloed into his, his Democratic agenda. But I think the same can be said about Congress as well, and Republican lawmakers and Democratic lawmakers. As we were saying earlier, they only really interact with people of their own parties. And so if you're not on good terms with people of the other party and people you need to work with in the other party, then it's going to be hard to keep that in mind. Mm.
Don't you think, though, Rebecca, that there may be times, certainly, and you can think of a whole host of issues where this might be the case, where principled passion may be more important than compromise?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is definitely the case. You can see that with, I guess, the example that was brought up earlier of gay marriage. I think a lot of people would argue that principled passion for legalizing same-sex marriage led to it being legalized and made the law of the land across the country. So that's definitely an example of staying really true to your
right.
Core beliefs.
Yeah. Dean in Pulaski, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess I wanted to say that I feel as your guest is kind of has well intentioned, you know, and I can understand it, but I feel like after, you know, 7 years with Barack Obama, that's exactly what he said when he was running for election. You know, we're not red or blue states, we're just, you know, one color, and that hasn't proven to be the case. And I think people have to have solidarity and fight, and I think it's not happening right now for whatever reason. I get very disappointed with the Democratic Party because I don't feel like they're fighting for the people. I can give you a couple examples of how, you know, this state has, and this governor has hurt our life. My wife's a teacher, and I cannot believe how brutal her job is. I mean, she'll get up sometimes at 3 in the morning and come at 7 at night. And they used to pay for that extra work. She's a special education teacher. She used to get paid for doing IEPs at 3 in the morning. Now she doesn't. And they do it because she has to do it because she's afraid. Because there's no protection. I'll tell you another thing that has affected my life. I was in a terrible car accident, and I have pain now for the rest of my life. I'm currently off of work. And I think it was the day Scott Walker got into office, he signed a bill which reduced your ability to get compensation from your insurance companies by 2/3. Now, there's two ways that the Republicans in this state have directly affected my life, and it has brought an incredible amount of pain and misery. And I think this idea that we can compromise with people who are doing that to their fellow citizens. How can you compromise with somebody who wants to take away health care
from our
fellow citizens?
So, Dean, what have you done with all the pain and anger? Have you let people know that you're upset? Have you talked to people who you feel are responsible about this? How do you channel it?
I find that I am so upset that I can't talk about it. I try to be respectful to people who I know have different views, and I don't bring anything up. And every once in a while, if they can affect my life, I'll be kind of nice about it. But otherwise, I avoid them. I spent 21 years in this community here in Pulaski, and there's people I don't ever want to talk to again in my life.
Rebecca.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you mentioned something that, you know, these groups are very well-intentioned, but ultimately, and what I kind of determined in my research is, because of all the things you're saying, they are misguided. I mean, people in Pulaski or in wherever else in the country just don't necessarily want this to, not that you don't want this to happen, but it's hard to get over that hump. It's hard to get over that obstacle of trusting the other side. And I think that's a serious barrier to ending hyperpartisanship. I chatted with, for this story, Bill Bishop, who's the author of that book, The mm-hmm. Big Sort. And I asked him, you know, do these groups have any chance of success? What they're doing, does it have any hope? And he said, basically, no. And I'm sure, and this is a great quote from him, I'm sure they have great conferences. And that just summed it up so well, because No Labels, for example, is, you know, spending $68 a plate to put on these dinners and conventions to end hyperpartisanship. And what is it actually doing? They can't point to too many results.
Kyle writes to us on Facebook, I wonder if you agree with this, Rebecca. The political center has vanished. All we have is polarized electors.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely, I think that's the issue here, that moderates are almost, punished might be too strong a word, but they're discouraged from having moderate points of view. Another social psychologist I spoke with said that it's human nature to want to be slightly ahead of the curve. So if you're in a group of Republicans, you know, conservative Republicans, you tend to be a little more conservative, and that's that echo chamber we're talking about. And it goes both ways, of course.
Right.
And so that really discourages people from being centrists.
Thanks, Dean, very much for your call, and I hope you get better. Joel in Appleton, hi.
Howdy. I agree. Very hyper-partisan time we live in. And you pointed out a lot of the good reasons that it is so. But I just wanted to point out an irony. And as I was coming of age as a voter in the 80s and early 90s, there was actually, it seemed to me, the opposite critique. And that was that the parties were too much the same, you know, and the Republicans had sort of drugged the Democrats, you know, to the right, and people weren't voting then because they felt like it didn't really matter if a Republican or a Democrat got in, because they, you know, two sides or different sides of the same coin, basically. So, you know, it's everybody's. You can't please anybody or everybody at any time.
Well, that throws a whole new light on the subject. That's interesting, isn't it, Rebecca?
Yeah, that is very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some people in this anti-polarization movement would hearken back for the days when people were a little more similar, so they could work together a little better.
Thanks, Joel, for your call. Let's go to Margie in Milwaukee. Hi, Margie.
Hi. Love this topic, and I wish I could connect with this kind of a group, so I'll be looking into it more. I had two comments. I don't know if we'll have time for me to do both, but I did want to tell you that for the 2008 for Obama, I canvassed a lot for him. I was on the neighborhood leads, and it was a very conservative area, and so I got chewed off of people's lawns and doors shut in my face.
Oh my.
But I also had people that wanted to talk to me because they weren't sure, or they were angry and they would tell me something, and they would confront me, and I would say, well, you know, I'm not so sure about that, but can I tell you why I'm canvassing for Obama? These are the things that really hit me. And then they would listen to me, and it would start a dialogue. And then I was standing in people's driveway sometimes for 30 minutes talking to one person.
Mm-hmm.
I even got invited into one home because he wanted to show me his gun collection, because he was a big NRA guy. And he really thought Obama was going to take away all of the guns. And, you know, it's 7 years now and we haven't done anything. The other thing I wanted to say is that I think one thing that's really hard on people that don't have the time to research the information and the answers is when things that are incorrect are not challenged. Like Trump is saying right now, we can't rescue the Syrian refugees because Obama wants to bring hundreds of thousands of them over. He's talking about 10,000, not hundreds of thousands. 10,000 is what comes in on the shores of some of these small countries every day. 5,000 and 10,000 people are landing. And why doesn't somebody say, you know, that's not correct, that's not what's happening? And there's too much of that that just goes on, and it snowballs.
Mm-hmm. Or the whole thing that he carried on forever about the birth certificate issue. It was just so distracting, and it just wasn't the truth. And a lot of levels, he must have known that. It's such a waste of our time, to say nothing of it not being true.
He's
not the only one.
Uh-huh. Rebecca, take it on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did want to go back to what you had said when you were canvassing for Obama in 08. That dialogue is just so crucial, and it's been proven, or at least shown to be proven on a smaller scale by many of the groups that I spoke with, these more grassroots-focused groups. There's one in particular, the Village Square, it started in Tallahassee, and they have chapters elsewhere now throughout the country. But it's all predicated on, you know, people used to meet up and talk with people of differing political beliefs in the Village Square, in meeting areas, and they've tried to recreate those. They had this this event, the longest table in Tallahassee. It was a 500-foot-long table set up outside in their downtown, and people got together, community members, to talk about, you know, how are race relations in Tallahassee? What do we hope for our community? And I think when you sit down with people, you see them as not just this partisan caricature, and so that is, you know, it's interesting that you had that same experience talking to people when you were canvassing as
well.
Yes,
yeah, it must have been very interesting, except for being shooed off the lawns. Margie, thank you very much for your call. We'll take more in just one moment. Our number, 800-486-8655. Rebecca Nelson is our guest, and we're talking about her piece in the National Journal, The War on Partisanship, How Fighting Polarization Became Its Own Cause. She's White House correspondent for National Journal, and here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, write your comments there. And we will read them. Kathleen Dunshow. And Twitter is at K Dunshow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have had a number of people who have been expressing interest in joining organizations like No Label. Do you know how to go about doing that, Rebecca?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can Google No Labels, and there's a citizen movement across the country, people who are interested in joining No Labels. I would also suggest you check out Living Room Conversations. You don't need to have, you know, be a part of a chapter or anything. You can just look at the guidelines on their website and click, you know, a different topic and say immigration, for example, or education policy, and invite a few friends over who have different political beliefs than you do, and use those guidelines. They have things you can say, like, you know, you first talk about why that issue, what's drawn you to that issue, what's the most important thing to you about it. Mm-hmm. And those are great guidelines to start having these conversations in your homes.
Thank you, Margie. Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hello.
Hi. I want to continue the idea of languaging, that I think it's very important that when commentators or hosts on radio and TV, whenever reference is made to gridlock in Congress, the language that is usually used is Congress can't get anything done. Congress can't do this. They can't do that. And can't implies that they have no agency
in the matter, that it's a fated thing, mm-hmm. that they have no power over this. And I think it's very important that we as citizens and as folks, you know, as journalists, excuse me, call them to account and stop using can't and start using won't. Because they can if they will, but they don't have the will.
Rebecca.
I think that's such a great point. Won't is a much better way to put it, because you do put the onus on lawmakers. I mean, they I'm sure would say that we can't get anything done because the other side has demands that we won't meet. But as you're saying, that's a choice. That's a choice that they're making. And I think that's something that I will definitely keep in mind in my further reporting. Mm.
Thank you very much, Stella, for your call. Bob in Oshkosh, hi.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good, Bob. You?
I got a real massive issue that goes on with this this whole topic, and one of the reasons why hyper-partisanship has taken its toll on the American electorate, and I mean that every sense of the word, is that there's been a tremendous amount of deviation from the truth that's taken with the rise of extremist media. For instance, what happens is that I see a particular problem, the lack of, as was mentioned before, the lack of curiosity on the part of the public. You can only listen to one radio station or watch one television station at a time. And when they start pushing the emotional buttons that lead you to the next step of listening to untruths that take place on it, people tend to go in that direction and stay with it because it hits their emotional triggers. They don't care about the facts. And this rise of especially right-wing radio, and even some of the left-wing stations I've seen, have been left-leaning stations have been really to create a big chasm in the American electorate, and it's a chasm that's strictly based on the fact that this is all the people pay attention to. What are your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you bring up a good point that people, to end partisanship, to hyper-partisanship, you need to want to. People, voters, need to want to change the dial to maybe the more conservative radio station if they listen to the more liberal talk shows. There's a group, another group I spoke with, All Sides, their whole idea is they offer news from the left, the right, and the center. And so you go to that website and you see, oh, well, here's something that Fox reported on. Oh, I see, this is from the right, and that sort of thing. But that's a crucial point. You need to type in All Sides, and you need to have an interest in getting views from the other side. And so that's something that these groups are running into, because polarization, people obviously, I mean, you might say you don't like it, but there are things about polarization that do have benefits for society. It's a way to define yourself. It's a way to find people like you, to find friends. So that's another factor that that is an obstacle to ending it.
Yeah. This there's not really time for this, but just a brief suggestion. We have about a minute left. Jill writes on Facebook, could you please talk about families being broken by partisanship, opposing extreme Tea Party views versus liberal attitudes among adult siblings have fractured my family beyond repair, it seems. Any suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really tough one. I think there was another Pew study that said people are less happy if their sons or daughters are marrying someone from the other side of the political spectrum than it's like the same thing as race was, you know, 60 or 70 years ago. And so, I mean, that's tough, but I think having some respect, and I know that's oftentimes a lot harder with family members, but showing that you want to listen to what they believe, I think that it sounds so simple, but it can go a long way.
Rebecca, thank you very much. There's a great deal of interest in this topic and among people in our audience. So thank you very much for writing what you did and sharing all of that with us. Thanks.
Well, thank you. It was great to chat.
Rebecca Nelson, White House correspondent for the National Journal, author of this piece we were referencing this hour, The War on Partisanship, How Fighting Polarization Became Its Own Cause. She covers 11 organizations, most started within the last 5 or 6 years, that see ideological division and political gridlock as very urgent problems. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour. And thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And speaking of Milwaukee, we talk about Milwaukee's neighborhoods with John Gerta the next hour of our show, which should be great. Thanks for listening and for all of your many contributions to this hour on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.